Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning into the Liberty Report. With me today is Chris Rossini, our co-host. Chris, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Dr. Paul.
Well, very good. We're going to be talking about a subject we have visited before, and it's very much in the news. We want to talk about coronavirus. We want to talk about gold. We want to talk about the marketplace. And we want to talk about the Fed. And they seem to be coming together. And there's a lot of blame going around because the markets are really jumping this morning. Gold is up sharply. It was up to 1640, 1650. And they say, well, this is the fear about coronaviruses and the Fed will have to print a lot of money. But if you look at it long term, you could have predicted and talked about gold has been going up sharply for a significant period of time. The last time it bottomed out at a little over $1,000 was 2016. It's been rising steadily, and the printing is massive. So gold will go up, but sometimes it just looks for an excuse. And right now, the panic over coronavirus is one of the reasons. And I think the panic, the concern is overblown, but that's a dangerous thing to say because it is dangerous, and people have been conditioned now to really, really fear it. Maybe not so much in the United States yet, but around the world, people know this is very, very serious business. But what pushes me back to trying to put this in a proper perspective is that I have looked several times to make sure I've read these numbers right. But the statistic is that 10,000 Americans have died from the flu this flu season. And there's, a dozen or two here. And there's also 650,000 people in the United States that have had the flu. And most people don't die. But it is significant compared to, coronavirus. But I think it's the unknown. I think it's the hype. I think it's the panic. And I think that sometimes people use it to maybe expand the power of the state. Sometimes they might even use it to make an excuse for really pumping the money supply. And all these things play into it. And I worry a little bit about talking about putting this in perspective because I'm not as worried about, the coronavirus is wiping out the population of the earth. It's not 1917, believe me. And so far, small children don't even get it. Sick people get it, old people get it, and those are the ones that may end up dying from it. But nevertheless, we have to deal with it in an economic sense. And I think this snap up on the gold price is always an indication, even if it is reflecting past monetary events, that's the way markets work. And I think that the indication of the coronavirus is that, yes, I think it's correct to assume maybe not correct economic policy, but it's correct political policy that we can expect the reassurance of the Fed to do whatever is necessary, for this problem that we have. And I know you've checked up on this a bit, Chris, and read about exactly what's happening. And I think Peter Schiff has actually written about this as well.
Yes, Dr. Paul. And before I get to Peter, those who watch us regularly may see the pattern in our shows. We'll do 4 days on foreign policy, and then on Fridays we talk about the economy and mostly the Fed. And the reason for that is, we have to prioritize. There's a lot of goofy stories that we could talk about every day, but the Fed is the focus. And that's what everybody wants to keep the focus off of, especially when there's a financial crisis, inflation, gold is rising. You got to look at the Fed. And that's why we stay on it, and we're going to continue to stay on it. Peter Schiff this week made a good point about the coronavirus. He says, the concern with coronavirus is that there's going to be a slowdown in output and economic growth. And he says, why on earth would the Fed respond by printing money? Why would any central bank print money while there's going to be less goods? More money, less goods, what does that spell? That's a prescription for rising prices and inflation. But that's what the Fed has planned anyway. They're going to print. And we have to always keep focus on the Fed.
Right. And what he's pointing out there is a fallacy that people accept, and that is that money represents wealth, and that is not true. Wealth is true assets. Money is used to build assets and facilitate trade and things like this, and maybe store some value. But adding additional monetary units that have no particular value, that is money out of thin air, I think Peter is exactly right. That is not a solution to this problem. But the problem is complex because we're dealing with the marketplace as well as a natural phenomenon. And then we have the demagogues out there maybe trying to take advantage of this. But the virus is very significant. But that will pass, but the Fed is not likely to pass as the virus is. But someday they'll do themselves in too. But the Fed is always there, and it's always the same answer: print more money and lower rates. Well, they can't lower rates anymore, so I guess they're going to have to depend on just printing money. But eventually, just printing money, it causes a loss of confidence. The one thing that is different, especially since September 17th, when there was a repo crisis in the morning, interest rates, overnight rates went up to 10%. But they're still doing that. They're monetizing the debt directly. Technically, the Federal Reserve Act says you can only do it indirectly. You sell bonds to business people and government can buy some up. In the end, it's all the same thing. If they're creating money out of thin air and getting it into the market, it confused the market players a little bit. But long term, it's always the same thing: more monetary units to solve this problem. I thought it was really ironic and a little bit silly. Oh, we have a crisis coming up. He's not calling the doctors. They're going to call the doctors, the PhDs at the Federal Reserve to solve this problem with coronaviruses. But you know, I think what we are dealing with so often, and we have noticed this to be the case in the presidential election, that there's a lot of terms thrown around, you know, capitalism and communism and pseudo-capitalism, but they don't start with a fundamental. And the fundamental for me in understanding economics is understanding what capital is. And the use of capitalism is a gross distortion. But capital, for my understanding, is what's left over after what you earn, that you use so much of it for living expenses and survival. So if you make $100, but you have to spend $75 to survive that particular week, you have $25 left over that can be an asset, a capital, and use it to buy stuff to make maybe improve your working conditions. So that is not exactly the way people understand this, because now capital comes from the Federal Reserve. And the value of capital, the value of savings, has to be very, very meticulous, regulated, so-called, by the marketplace, finding market rates of interest, and that's what we don't have. So the capital markets, you know, in socialism, they control the capital. And in interventionism, the type of pseudo-socialism Mickey Mouse system that we have now, mm-hmm. is done by regulating spending and subsidizing the military-industrial complex and the wars and the welfare state, and regulating it and printing money, and the fiscal people work with the people in the Federal Reserve to plan the economy. So the Federal Reserve, they're economic planners. They're a lot more than what they pretend to be, that they have to prevent inflation from coming, and that's all they do is inflate. And that was one of their jobs, and now they claim unemployment is fully engaged in, that they don't have to worry about that. But they haven't really dealt with the problems that the system that we have doesn't fairly distribute the wealth. Now there's attempts, they're starting to realize that it's way out of kilter, the 1% getting richer and richer, and that's a consequence of the type of monetary system that we have. So we see people like Amazon saying, oh, well, we'll help out. Everybody everybody's work starting or whatever, no matter what your production is, you can get $15 an hour, which is catch-up, but it's not the way it works. The capital should be distributed by transactions, and it should be voluntary, and we should have interest rates set by the marketplace. But it isn't that way, and that's why you end up hearing these arguments, between people like Bloomberg and Sanders. Don't call me a communist, Sanders said, but he probably is not a communist in the sense of a communist that the Soviet system had. But he endorses a principle where the state controls everything and becomes state ownership, but they will be fair and balanced. That's 100% of the concept that leads to authoritarian communism, because it doesn't work. And all they can do is work harder with regulations, because we have to have fair distribution. It turns into a monster. So just because he wants softer communism or softer socialism, it doesn't help. It's what principle you endorse. So if you endorse a free market system, 100%, which is not likely ever to come, you know exactly who's to make these decisions. The reason why I think it's so attractive, everybody talks about, democracy. And democracy, of course, was never mentioned in the Constitution. The dictator of the majority is a terrible system. But in economics, democracy is good. And that is, the consumer does the voting. The consumer decides what the prices are going to be, what the businessman has to do, decides who goes out of business and who doesn't. Nobody gets free bailouts. Nobody forcibly redistributes wealth. You don't have a Federal Reserve manipulating anything. But the whole thing is the consumer is the king. And that means that it diminishes the powers of labor unions, and it also diminishes the power of the gouging of the businessman, and the power held in the hands of just a few in the banking industry and in the financial industry, because that's directed, to take care of the military-industrial complex and all these other things. So I think a few fundamentals is what's lacking when we start talking about this, the idea of what is capital and who should direct the economy. And some people say on the short run, well, that's going to mean unemployment for so-and-so. But yes, maybe there will be transitions. But guess what? What's happening now will be sort of like what happens in Zimbabwe and Venezuela. That's the kind of a system that we don't want to have. People will really suffer. But the philosophy behind what we're doing, if it's authoritarian, it won't work. And it'll always demand more to keep it in place. And that is what I heard the other night watching those debates. Authoritarians. And some just delighted. I finally concluded, why aren't they reasonable? Why can't they look and listen to our argument? It doesn't work. I think they know that. Because some of them, their goal is power. The goal isn't, to understand how freedom works. Their goal is to justify the monolithic state. And that's why a little disruption doesn't bother them. So they don't care if it doesn't work. That just, if they're in charge, that just means they expand the state. And we witness this all the time on why there's always an expansion, of the bureaucratic state and the political power that gravitates to Washington. So, Chris, what kind of economic policy would you like to see us have?
Oh, boy, it'd be the exact opposite of what we have today. But we'll get there someday, maybe not in our lifetimes. But, if we could contribute to bringing that about, that's good enough. Dr. Paul, I wanted to talk about our good friend Jeff Deist, who's the president of the Mises Institute. He gave a good talk recently that I listened to, a podcast, and he refreshed my memory. He said Ben Bernanke promised that, the Fed is not going to allow another crash like 1929, which, they created, FYI. And they would not allow another one like the dot-com bubble in 2000. They would just print and make sure that they never stop printing. And that's what we're seeing. It doesn't matter what the excuse is, coronavirus, climate change, we start seeing the headlines. And Democrats, they see this and they're like, oh yeah, well, we want free stuff too. Let's print and call it modern monetary theory. But it's not up to the Fed to say that they're not going to allow a crash to happen. The crash is not going to ask their permission. A crash will happen despite everything that they do. And in fact, because of what they do, it's going to be very, very bad. The more that they print, which they have been doing, the deeper, the harder the correction is going to have to be, because corrections are to correct the errors. And what they're doing is constant errors over and over, just piling them up. And that's what we have in store for us. So it doesn't matter if they say we're not going to allow another crash to happen. It's not their call to make.
Very good. And, you know, this whole idea, and you mentioned the word free stuff, and they use it casually, but it's good in politics. You know, when we create a system that doesn't work, and we create a group of people like most of the middle class and less, not getting the same benefits that others are getting, you know, they think this is fair. You know, just take from the rich and give it to the poor, because that free enterprise system, it doesn't work at all. So they really gravitate to the free stuff. They never really raise the, you know, ask the question, this doesn't make any sense at all. This is complete nonsense. And yet, in the debates the other night, almost every one of them rattled off all the free stuff. Trillions and trillions of dollars. And it didn't faze them one bit. Nobody cared about how you paid for it. Nobody cared about the deficits. Nobody talked about why printing money is bad. Nobody cared about the, you know, bringing our troops home. The one person that could have talked about bringing the troops home, they wouldn't let her in the pace, and that's Tulsi Gabbard. No, you can't have people challenging the system. But this free stuff, you know, is an easy thing to sell for the people that went to government schools, because they are taught this is morally correct to get the so-called free stuff, and not talking about capital and where it comes from. You have to work for it and you have to save it. That's what capital is all about. But the other thing that they do when they talk about the free stuff, they've couched it in terms that are very attractive, and that's the humanitarian issue. Why we refer to some that really promote this as bleeding hearts. They're the only ones who care, and they have compassion for people, and they call this is a human right to make sure that everybody gets something. But they never ask the question, is it wrong to steal? Oh, well, we don't want them to steal what they want. They're not allowed to go into the grocery store and steal, but we'll send our government. But, you know, that what I just said has already been refuted. I think just recently they decided that civil liberties mean that if you get caught stealing food in a grocery store, you don't get charged with a crime. So it seems like it would be difficult to believe it would go that far, but it literally has. They just say, oh, no, we don't charge people if they just steal a little food from a grocery store, even if we catch them on camera, even if it's the 10th time in a row that has happened. So that's the absurdity of it all. And the commonsensical questions that people ask, they're not really interested in it, and it becomes a personality fight. You know, just look at all that nonsense went on. You know, yesterday, of course, I referred to what I was watching as a circus, and made a little bit of fun of it and said, bring in the clowns. You know, bring in the clowns. This thing is out of control. People need some entertainment. And unfortunately, they listened to me, and we still have the clowns coming in with these acts of economic nonsense. But the only sad part about this is we win in the end, and it's going to get a lot worse before we win. And winning, to me, we win the argument that this is nonsense, and it's not a way to peace and prosperity and liberty for our people. So, Chris, I'm hoping that we continue our efforts to pursue this and come up with some answers that people will join us in.
Well, I'm optimistic, as I know you are, Dr. Paul. I'll finish up by saying that, you know, the Fed does not know what they're doing, and that's not a controversial statement. It's not like, oh, if Ron Paul were only Fed chairman. No, even Dr. Paul has said himself, no one can regulate the economy, run the economy by price fixing and counterfeiting money. There shouldn't be a Federal Reserve. a la his book and the Fed. And they're not in control, even though they may feel like they're in control. Economic laws are in control. Supply and demand is in control. And most importantly, individual liberty ultimately is in control. Now, central planners like the Fed can mess things up to a point, up to where it's unbearable anymore. And as they approach that point, they take more desperate measures. And we can see that. We can see that they are printing no matter what. We can see the socialists saying, free everything, whatever you could think of, no matter what. These are desperate measures for a system that's falling apart. So when all of their options are exhausted, and who knows, nobody knows the answer to when that will be, the market will reaffirm itself. And when the market reaffirms itself, it does so with authority, and there is no stopping it when that happens.
Very, very good. And I'm going to close by just reemphasizing what I consider a very important indicator, something I've watched for a long time because I was warned that this would come even in the 1960s, that printing money will lead to a downfall of the relative imperfect gold standard we had under Bretton Woods. And lo and behold, that happened in 1971 when gold was $35 an ounce. And even though the government has interfered constantly, especially since we've had a Federal Reserve, trying to pretend that if we regulated the price of gold and keep it low and make the dollar more valuable, this will all work out. They can do it. They can get away with it for a long time. But ultimately, it breaks through like it did in 1971. And gold during the 70s went from $35 up to $800. So it always breaks through. And that indicates, you know, that it's too much inflation over the paper money. And if the people get worried about which direction it's going, how far it's going to go, and there's a political problem or a health problem, oh, we better get some more. So gold prices are an important indicator. And just because Bernanke explained to me very thoroughly that gold is not money doesn't mean that gold is not money. Somebody else is going to decide that. And who knows? I don't know absolutely that gold will maintain its status. It's been there for 10,000 years. So is it going to be that way for the next? We don't know. Maybe there will be a substitute. But I'll tell you what, it's not going to be the Bernanke's of the world that's going to determine what exactly is money. What we need is a free society and competing ideas and concerns about what money should be and which is the best for facilitating trade and promoting individual liberty. And right now, our markets are telling us that we've embarked on a lot of spending, huge deficits, printing a lot of money. And when sudden things pop up like a virus, then, oh, that's the reason it's happening. Well, no, there's a lot of other fundamentals that lead up to it. But financially, the gold price is still pretty darn significant to tell us about the health of the economy and the health of the political system. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.